I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Nancy Kassebaum was the first woman to ever represent Kansas as a U.S. senator, and she did so for nearly 20 years. Today, the political legend shares her thoughts on the state of the Republican Party in Kansas and in Washington. Then, tracing your lineage can be tough, especially if your ancestors were slaves. Today, we'll learn about the challenges of filling in family trees that are rooted in slavery and get professional advice to help you along your way. Sometimes a search for where you came from can be just as meaningful as what you find. We'll finish with the latest edition of A Fan's Notes. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Former Kansas Senator Nancy Kassebaum was known as a voice of reason during her 18 years in the U.S. Senate. She left public life in 1997, and here it is, 20 years later, we're still interested in what she has to say. Last fall, during an appearance at the Dole Institute of Politics in Lawrence, Kassebaum made it clear she wasn't a huge fan of a certain Republican named Donald Trump. Today, we'll get an update. Senator Kassebaum joins us from her home in Morris County, Kansas, out in the Flint Hills. And, Senator, what a pleasure to have you on again. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you. I'm glad to be here and hear all the news that was coming while you started out.
A lot of things going on, Senator.
This is never a dull day, right?
Do you miss it out there, or are you glad just to be away?
Well, I love it here. You know, I really do. I try and keep up, but it can be discouraging. And I think it's interesting to hear Congressman Cleaver speak to the concerns in Washington, and certainly interesting about Topeka. I'm pleased that the tax bill passed. That was interesting, the possibility of whether the governor would let it go into effect without his signing.
I was going to say, you know, a few years ago, one of your sons, Bill, was in the legislature in Topeka. And what do you make of the state of things in the state capitol these days and the state budget that's getting so much attention, Senator? What do you make of it all?
Well, I think it shows how the public is confused. Certainly in Kansas, we've been very disappointed that there's not the money for education or health care. Mm-hmm. I have been very disappointed that Kansas, one, didn't sign up to get the Medicaid through the
Affordable Care Act.
And I think that Kansas should provide Medicaid support. Now, a lot of it's going to change. I think that there are some reforms probably that were necessary. I would agree with the Affordable Care Act. But I think the reason they're having some trouble is they also feel there are parts that have to be kept to make it really work. And it goes back, I think, a lot, Steve, to tell you the truth, whatever you're looking at, whether you're looking at Topeka, or you're looking at your own county governments, or you're the national, is better management of what we have. I think a realization that people feel that nothing much gets done, mm-hmm. and it's just like sort of greasing the wheel as it goes around. And so deep down, a lot of concern, though, and I think there should be. I said I'm more sad than mad, mm-hmm. because I think we have to find ways to come together. That's the thing. It can't just be Democrats on one side and Republicans on the other. And you may not always come up with the best agreement that both sides will agree to, but eventually work out the difficulties.
You know,
and that's what should have happened with the health care bill, the Affordable Care Act. But no one wants to spend that kind of time. Now, I'm speaking at the national level.
Mm-hmm.
The oversight responsibilities of the in House and Senate, of the designated committees. Much can be done on some of the parts of the bills that have already been passed, the law that's in effect, in oversight hearings and bring it up so that things can be changed. And now we have, I think, escalating events at the national level.
You know, you've said, and I've heard you say it myself more than once, that if you were to run for office today, even back home here in Kansas, that you doubt you could get out of a Republican primary. You still feel that way?
I'm not going to test it.
You had enough of that, eh?
Well, I don't know. I even when I ran in 1978, there were controversial issues, the tractorcade, for one thing.
Right.
And then still questions about the Panama Canal Treaty, but that had been signed. And so today, though, there's a real frustration. And I think my own view is that I think it comes from people not always, there's so many outlets of what people listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of those different outlets are targeted one way or the other. So if you want to find something that can really make you mad about immigration, tune in to that.
Mm-hmm.
Station or channel or Facebook or all of that. You know, I am a real dropout. I don't know. Maybe I ought to take up lifelong learning, but I don't do email. I don't have Facebook. I have no interest.
Do you have internet out at the house where you live now?
I do, but I don't use my cell phone. That's the, my son and daughter-in-law gave me a lap pad that I could pull up to see what was in the Wichita Eagle or so forth.
Right.
But, you know, I don't use it really.
Yeah, yeah.
I read a lot. I get, I really keep up that way. But most people don't anymore. It comes through Facebook or it comes through the different channels they get, or what they get, the texting on smartphones.
Well, your point, Senator, is there's no middle ground any longer. That
there's no
what
middle,
you and Senator Dole
no
talked
center.
About last fall, that's gone from our politics now.
And it's gone because everything seems so instant.
Mm-hmm.
If I said something that was picked up and immediately on channels, it used to be Rush Limbaugh, and I think it's even gone beyond that now. That was taken out of context and then really was upsetting to people that feel frustrated that everything just keeps going along and they don't seem to feel that anything has changed for them.
Can the center come back again someday?
Well, I think it has to. I think it has to. You can't accomplish much, and even at your own local level, if it's so divided. And right now in Kansas, as you know, our agricultural economy has not been as strong as we would wish, and there are various reasons for that. But I feel that we have to care about health care. We have to care about education. And that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody has to go 4 years in college, I have to say.
Yeah.
I think we have to care, though, that there are options there that prepare people for skills that they're going to need. And that's like me.
Mm-hmm.
I said I couldn't get a job today using a computer with any success.
Yeah. Former Kansas.
I said one reason I left the Senate was they were going to connect all the senators by email. And I said, well, I don't want to do that.
Former Kansas Senator Nancy Kassebaum is my guest. You know, your family has such a long history in the Republican Party. How hard is it for you, you know, this idea that the party has become something very different from what it once was?
Well, it is different from what it once was. Again, where is the desire, you know, whether you liked it or not, for the Republicans to take a united stand as sort of by the leadership there with Senator McConnell and Mitch McConnell and others in the leadership saying, No, we are not going to hear President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
It's not the time to do it. It's not right for him to send it up. Well, it was almost a year before he was leaving office. Or even the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
It was united. Now, I really hope the Democrats don't stay united against everything that the Republicans propose. If everybody's going to get in lockstep, one side or the other, we aren't going to accomplish anything. And I think it takes people who are willing to stand up on the floor of the Senate. And sometimes it's John McCain. Mm-hmm. Certainly when it's defense issues, he does. I think with a vote on education secretary, I was frankly proud of Senator Collins and Senator Murkowski.
Yeah, Barbara Murkowski, yeah.
Yes. Lisa Murkowski from Alaska.
From Alaska, I'm sorry. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Because they realized in a small state, you don't have all those options for choice and voucher.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe do in the larger cities, but not to get into an education issue. But again, there has to be a willingness to come together and reach out and find a Democrat or Republican that you can have a little group, and sometimes you can be together and sometimes not. But a dialogue. Don't just close it out. And I think that's happened even some in Topeka. I think it's changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a benefit to our state legislature.
You know, Senator, in September last year, you appeared with Senator Dole at the Dole Institute in Lawrence, and you made it clear that day that you weren't crazy about Donald Trump. And in fact, you said this: "I'm really, really terribly disappointed in my own Republican Party with the leadership of Donald Trump." Can I ask, did you wind up voting for him?
No, I didn't.
And what gave you such pause about him, Senator?
Well, even from the very first of the 17 Republicans who debated for the primary vote, I realized that I just didn't like the way he talked. He seems very glib, and he was like a bully to the other candidates, the others who were there in that those lengthy debates, which was too much to even call a very good debate.
Who did you like?
Well, my candidate really was Governor Kasich from Ohio.
Ohio, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or Jeb Bush. I felt they both brought an experience and an understanding of what was necessary to work with the legislature, because Governor Kasich had been in the House of Representatives in Washington, and he was in his second term as governor of Ohio. But he didn't get anywhere.
So as you read the news these days, we talked about it at the start of the show in our newscast, you know, about all the developments in Washington. What do you make of this new president and what's going on?
Well, I think it's a lot of confusion. I think it just looks like turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the press conference yesterday, and I had to think, why did the president even bring up that he had more votes than the Electoral College than had ever been?
Which was erroneous when he said it, right.
Well, and it was erroneous when he said it, and that was pointed out. And then he said, sit down, or whatever. I don't know. I couldn't keep. But I thought, why is he bringing it up? Who cares about that right now?
Right.
There are very important issues he needs to address. And I thought that when Congressman Cleaver mentioned you brought up the National Guard, that would be a big mistake. And I'm not sure. I think his answer was right. I don't know that that was anything other than something that just got out.
Right.
But that shows you how these leaks tend to get out for various reasons. And this isn't the first administration that that's happened. But there is no real parts of the Republican Party saying, wait a minute, don't do that.
I was going to ask you about that. What do you make of the fact, how are your fellow Republicans, to what extent are they standing up to President Trump and even the senators from Kansas? Do you want to see them stand up to him more?
Well, you have to be true to yourself. I think you have to bring that to your party and the interests there. And certainly I have neighbors that are still very strong supporters of President Trump. And we carry on interesting discussions. I have a respect for those who hold differing view. But I think now my grave concern is, frankly, Steve, how we must look abroad. And just the very fact there's trouble brewing in Pakistan, let them feel that we're not really in control here and we're all divided and quibbling and going off on tangents, particularly now with not a security, the National Security Advisor. I just feel that's something that troubles me.
Yeah.
I think we can deal with things at home. And there's some things that the president, like the tax code and the reform of the tax code, there are some regulations that do need to be addressed. There are some major things that are thoughtful that can be and should be done. But looking at it from abroad, just to say, well, we could go out and bomb that ship, that Russian boat, anytime. Well, that was silly. And they could go out and bomb our spy ship that's off their coast in Russia. I mean, this is not, it's not a level of what I would hope for leadership for our country right now. When I think, when they claimed that President Obama had been weak, let's be sure we know what we're talking about, because there are always unintended consequences. And I worry. I worry about Pakistan. I worry about the thought that maybe we're going to support a one state in Israel, and then maybe we need to move the capital to Jerusalem, changing years of Republican and Democrat presidents who've signed on, and the rest of the nations as well. There's going to be a big struggle, I think, between the Arab and the old Arab Persian world.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to be one who thinks it's a mistake. I see where we may be sending in more ground troops into Syria. Well, I'm one who really believed when General Powell said, "You go in, then you own it."
Mm-hmm. Former Kansas Senator Nancy Kassebaum is my guest. Is there some thought, though, that our politics have fundamentally changed and Donald Trump simply is a dramatic change agent, Senator?
That could be. I think it is going to change. I think we're moving into a different era, and a lot of it has to do with the way so much is handled digitally with the news.
Mm-hmm.
Gone are the ability to sort of sit down and meet with the Rotary and Farm Bureau dinners and your 4-H events and have a dialogue that used to be. I know that Senator Moran just finished going through all counties, 152 counties,
mm-hmm.
in Kansas, and I should know that, and meeting with everybody, and that's good. But to have a discussion with your a little more in depth about where we're going, those days, and the part of it is just everything happens so quick.
Those days are over, you're saying.
And you put it on Facebook, and that.
Yeah.
I think those days are over. I'm not sure that that's a good idea. I still think it's so important to be able to just visit and have the neighbors, know what your neighbors are thinking and have those discussions. Maybe it would say there's not time. I think, frankly, Congress ought to stay in session from Monday through Friday.
We
used to in the Senate.
To get more work done.
Well, it isn't just get more done, do the right thing. Have the oversight hearings. Call up the assistant secretaries. We don't even have a deputy secretary of state yet confirmed.
Mm-hmm. Well, What did you make of President Trump's immigration ban, Senator? What did you make of that?
I thought it was carelessly handled and rolled out. There are a lot of people that would like to see some things done regarding immigration, but think about the right way and, again, the unintended consequences. And he says that coming next week, they're going to be doing one that would meet the requirements and would be satisfactory. Well, we'll see. I think it's a mistake to create havoc when it needn't be created.
Yeah.
Now, it is a different era, I think, coming. And the Democrats don't have that much leadership right now either.
Right.
So, you know, both parties are undergoing change. I find a lot of my own grandchildren and younger generation who are out of college, some still in, that age group thinks of themselves as independent.
Right, right. You know, you were the first woman ever elected to a full term in the Senate without her husband having previously served in Congress. I'm wondering how satisfied you are when it comes to the progress that women have made when it comes to winning seats in the House and Senate.
Oh, I think so. I think when I left, there were more coming,
mm-hmm.
and there still continue to be. And I always said, I'm glad because it's no longer a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many women who are in leaderships in business, in universities, and superintendents at high schools. I think that's a good idea. I've always felt, frankly, women were a little bit able to understand how important it was to appreciate someone else's point of view
mm-hmm.
and work towards a compromise. We usually have to do it within a family, and that's why I've always thought women, that woman's voice could lend a lot of support because of that ability.
You know, when you first came back to Kansas a few years ago to live again, you were one of the first notable Kansas politicians to return home to live in recent decades. At the time, you said it was a mistake not to come back to Kansas. Why did you say it's a mistake not to come back? What were you thinking?
I said you should always feel that you could go home again. Every politician should feel they could go home again. I think it's because that's where your roots are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most don't. And they still, I certainly, Bob, I have to really admire Bob. And, you know, he and I didn't always agree.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always respected Bob.
Bob and Dole, you're talking about. Yeah,
Bob Dole, I'm sorry, yeah. His wit, his ability still today, at his age, is something to be admired.
He's a marvel, isn't he? It's just amazing.
It is amazing.
He's come back and visited every county in recent years.
Yes, he has. He sort of like his farewell tour, but it was more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I was with him at the state fair year before last, and he and I, at 4:30, I left. He was still there. No, I think we both share a view, though, that we're troubled by the time we're in. And I think politically he would say that, too. He's very much a Republican, and I am, too. But I would like to see us as a party get back to realizing there were voices that needed to be answered, and we weren't, but how we answer it and how we work to provide that leadership that is important, both at home and in Washington and abroad, I think needs to be thought through. And I guess in many ways, Steve, it's how you use the news media.
Right, right. Well, before you go, do you have a chance to get out and walk in the prairie out there in Morris County
sure.
now and then? Or?
Oh, sure.
Yeah?
Oh, the only sounds I hear are the coyotes at night or the wind.
Sounds nice, Senator.
That's the truth. See, I don't have paved road around, so I usually look a little bit like I'm got an old dirty car.
Well, Senator,
I do love it. I do love it, and I do stay involved, and I like to be because it's just important that we all stay involved.
Right. Senator, it's always a pleasure to have you. I appreciate you taking the time, and I hope we can visit again before too long.
Thanks so much.
You bet.
Bye.
That's former Kansas Senator Nancy Kassebaum. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the struggle to find ancestors who may have been slaves. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. On yesterday's show, we explored how postmodern artist David Sally looks, thinks, and feels about art. You can find that conversation online at kcur.org/uptodate. Monday is President's Day. On the program, we'll learn a little bit about the 13th Amendment that abolished slavery with an historian and Abraham Lincoln expert. We'll also get a roundup from Harvest Public Media reporters about the stories making headlines in Food, Fuel, and Field. That's Monday on the show. Well, finding your roots can be a difficult task, especially if your ancestors were slaves. The good news is there's a Kansas City organization that's holding a workshop in a few days aimed at making that task of finding African-American ancestors a little easier. With us now is Sherry Camp. She's a genealogy librarian at the Topeka and Shawnee County Public Library and founder and president of the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society. And Sherry, so nice to have you. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, how difficult is it to track down ancestors who were slaves?
It is pretty difficult. It's been more difficult in the past, but it's getting easier as technology changes things.
How can technology help when maybe records aren't that available for some people who are slaves?
Well, that's just it. There are records available, but they may not be available universally. The Freedmen's Bank or Freedmen's Bureau records, I don't know if you've heard of them, are from the National Archives. They've been microfilmed. They've been around for a long time. This is covering a period of time that was just after slavery. Mm-hmm. And so in the southern states, the federal government went in and started helping create an infrastructure where there was devastation. And so those records that were created helped to identify African Americans who had just become free. It a lot of times not only gives their names, but their slave owners' names, where they came from, where they were born, and various things like that. Those records have now been digitized. And now they're available online. So it's a lot easier now to find records for people who were enslaved in the South.
I was going to say, in your world, isn't there something called the 1870 wall?
That's true.
That's a term, the 1870 wall. What is that and what does that represent?
Well, okay, so you know freedom came in 1865. And in 1870 was the first federal census whereby African Americans would have been documented en masse. And so you can work all the way back to 1870, but when you get to that point, there's the wall. So you have to start getting creative about what records you're going to find after that.
Do you think a lot of African Americans, Sherry, even have a sense that it's possible now there are new tools available to go and look for ancestors? Or do so many just think, well, hey, it's possible I had ancestors who were slaves, so I'm not even going to bother to look?
Both are true. I have people who just get on Ancestry.com or FamilySearch.org and find somebody right away. Of course, those people are likely before the 1870 wall. So they're successful. And once you're successful, that gives you encouragement to keep going. Mm-hmm. However, there are people also that say, you know, I know my family was enslaved. It was a terrible thing. I don't want to think about it. I don't even want to look because I don't think I'll find anything.
And you would say to them, what then?
There's a record for every person somewhere. Just start looking. But you begin with yourself. That's the golden rule in genealogy. You begin with yourself and work backwards. And it's really a mystery that you're solving. So one generation at a time gives you clues to find the next generation back. So as you find information, it leads you to more information. Before you know it, you're finding all kinds of stuff.
In terms of degrees of difficulty here, going back one generation, two, where does it begin to get really tough?
It depends on how old you are, of course. You know, if you're a baby boomer, it's probably around the fourth generation, where people are born maybe, parents would be born around the 1860s or somewhere around there. But you can find the children, of course. It just gets more and more difficult after that.
Hey, have you gone and looked at your own family?
Absolutely.
Tell us about it.
Well, I've done a lot of research. I've been doing it for almost 30 years now, or I should say this is my 30th year now.
So you have people trace back to 400 AD or something like that.
I wish.
30 years work.
I wish. And that's why I've been doing it for so long, because I started with my great-grandmother on my mother's side. She was alive when I got started, and I was able to get some information from her, but there's a lot she didn't tell me. And so I would find information, and then she would confirm it. And then I'm like, okay, that's great. I'll find some more information. But back in those days, we didn't have the internet. And so I had to go and crank the reel on microfilm. And every microfilm reel was a two-hour chore.
Oh, man.
And so now you could just put information in there and get it right out. But that's not always the best way to go. Back to that microfilm reel, when you see the image that comes up, it's part of the whole reel set. So it's a good idea to look through all of those images on the set, because you never know what other family members you may find. One of my research endeavors ended up finding, I had already found my great-grandfather, and I was looking for his wife's parents, and I had never seen their names before, but when I got her their marriage record, I found their last names, and when I went to go look for them, they were sitting next door.
What?
Yeah, they were next door to the family I'd already found.
Really?
So, you know, you never know who is in the family or where they are on the microfilm roll, so you want to make sure that you look through that. But I have there are eight people on my fourth generation line.
Mm-hmm.
I found most of them, but it's been a slow way to go, because some records are online, some records aren't, some records are hidden, and sometimes you just don't know where to look. So you have to investigate what you already have, look for the clues, and sometimes that could be the fun all in itself.
So you've gone back to roughly, what, the 1860s in your own family then?
I would say that on several lines, I have people who were born right at the turn of the 18th century. So,
oh, really?
19th century. That'd be 1800, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So you've gone back prior to Civil War then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you talk about clues, Sherry, that makes all of this kind of fun, you're talking about things like what? What's an example
of a
clue?
Okay, so Some of the kind of general rules is a woman is usually married somewhere around 20. That's not always the case, but kind of a general rule. You get 2 years before or after that, around that time is kind of the leeway. And she's usually born where she's married, and she usually has her first child where she was born or married.
Mm-hmm.
So those things help you. If you don't know where the mother was born, then you can look at the generation before and see where the oldest child was born. And so that kind of gives you some clues as to what to look for,
mm-hmm,
and where to look. And so it helps give you a place to point you into, a direction to point you into. It doesn't always help you when you're looking for a specific place. For instance, I had my 1870 line, that wall where I had my fourth great grandmother. And she was born in Missouri. Well, that's great. She lived in Missouri. She lived in Kansas City, Missouri, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
But I had no idea what town in Missouri, what county in Missouri she was from.
Mm.
It wasn't until I found another record, which was a military record, where her husband had been in the military. She'd gotten a pension, he'd gotten a pension, and she'd consequently gotten a widow's pension, that it said she was born in Warrensburg. That I could go to now Warrensburg, find more of her family, and find her parents.
That's got to be a pretty cool moment when you come across a record like that that sheds light on something you've been looking for a very long time.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Yeah.
I have to say I was totally excited, and I still am.
Yeah.
Well, I still am.
Well, I should just mention that in celebration of Black History Month, the Midwest Genealogy Center and the Midwest African American Genealogical Interest Coalition are presenting a workshop on how African Americans can locate enslaved ancestors. The workshop will be at 1 on Saturday, February 25th, a week from Saturday, at the Midwest Genealogy Center, 3440 South Lee's Summit Road out in Independence. Registration is full, but there's a wait list. You can join by visiting mymcpl.org/ Black History. I'll put that out again in a few minutes. But what's going to happen at this workshop? Because this sounds like there's a lot of interest already.
Okay, so what I do is I go through a list of four or five different ways that you can look for your slave ancestors, and I give a case study that shows how I've done it. So I've given a little bit of information here, and I kind of show them in records how it can be done. And
online, pretty much.
Well, it'll be a PowerPoint presentation, mm-hmm. so yes.
But the work that people can do would be online at home for the most part.
Some of it is, some of it isn't, but yes, technically, that would be the case,
okay.
Yes.
And that's how people get started then?
That's how they get started. When you get to slave ancestry, it goes a little bit deeper, but it can be done. That's the thing that I want everyone to know, it can be done.
Are there records out there that you know about that need to be digitized that haven't been for one reason or another? And are there efforts, Sherry, underway to get some of that work done?
You know, that's a good question. I really appreciate you asking that. There are records coming to light all the time. I was just talking to a fellow genealogist who found some marriage records and some Freedmen's Bureau records where she lives that were dusty and had not ever been looked at, let alone digitized or indexed.
So that stuff's coming to the forefront all the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. How do you hear about that stuff?
Well, we have people like me who are energetic and love genealogy and love our family history and are continually looking for things. And when we look for, as in the example that I just gave, we find various things. So I could be looking for something for my family and find a cache of records that no one else has looked at.
That's interesting. Well, if our listeners have a quick question or two, we could take a phone call now. 816-235-2888 is the number. If you have a question about genealogy and where to go and how to start, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. I imagine genealogists, there's a network out there that you guys are swapping information about possible repositories of information and records all the time.
Absolutely.
You guys get together and probably have a good old time talking about
this
stuff.
We do. I just came from a conference in Salt Lake where we had an African-American tract, and there are lots of things. DNA is a big deal right now, so people are tracing their genealogy back to Africa. We have conferences.
Help me with that. How does DNA get you back to Africa? Because people weren't taking DNA samples back then, right?
Not back then, but now, because DNA is something that is in your blood that travels down through generations. So, for instance, one of my fellow genealogists did his DNA, and there's a database of people who have also done their DNA, and he had a match to someone from Ghana and found his family back in Ghana and went to visit them, as a matter of fact.
That family is still there. They're living, so that's why there can be a match.
Exactly. So we're talking about living people. Yes.
That opens up all kinds of possibilities once you can make a match to a family back in Ghana then.
That's correct. And what a wonderful opportunity that is to feel connected to family that's been separated for years and years and years.
Well, what does DNA represent in terms of potential for the whole world of genealogy going forward?
It really is an example of the fact that we really are all related. I have had many people come up to me who look, you know, like they're white, but they tell me I have certain amount of percent of African-American in my blood. Same goes for me. I look African-American, but I have like 20% European blood. So you can't look at a person and say where they come from or who they are. And that kind of levels the playing field a little bit. I think that makes us all feel human instead of whatever race or, you know, color we may be.
I was going to say, if that set of facts you just trotted out was more widely known, that could have a pretty profound impact on how a lot of people think about race and who we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm having more and more experiences with not only people who have African-American DNA, but also people who have had whose family have had slaves.
Yeah. Yeah. What else will happen at the workshop a week from Saturday, just quickly?
There are quite a few things. We'll mostly give questions and answers. People will get an opportunity to have hands on and learn more about how to find their slave ancestors.
Why did you get into genealogy to begin with? What was the attraction for you, Sherry?
I first started just trying to find my four-generation line. My great-grandmother, as I said before, was alive. And when I found out how hard it was going to be, I'm like, either I'm going to stop now or I'm going to dedicate my life to it. There's only two ways to go.
And why did you opt for the way you opted?
Because it was intriguing. I wanted to know who I am. Mm-hmm. Where did my family come from? Who are we? What's important about my family?
That's so interesting. Well, Sherry Camp is a genealogy librarian at the Topeka and Shawnee County Public Library. She's founder and president of the Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society. That workshop, again, is a week from Saturday, 1 o'clock at the Midwest Genealogy Center. More information, mymcpl.org/blackhistory. So interesting. Thanks so much for your time, Sherry.
Thank you.
You bet.